on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Welcome along to another edition of the Orient Hour. This is a pre-recorded show because obviously Wednesday evening, 7:45, Orient are playing Queen's Park Rangers. So we've recorded this before the match, and all being well, later on this evening we'll be issuing an Orient Hour Extra with an updated look at the QPR match. But that's all being well, and all being well in the studio with me at the moment is former Orient player Terry Howard. Good evening, Terry.
Evening, Andy.
And Richard Priest making his Orient Hour debut.
Hello, Andy.
And on the line, none other than the legend himself, Mr. Steve Tongue.
Good evening, Andy. Thank you very much.
That's a good build-up, wasn't it? Well, Steve was at the match yesterday, and before we chat to Steve about the game, I think we'll first of all hear the views of the manager himself.
Well, Kenny, thanks for joining us. Was that a point gained?
It was, definitely. I felt, you know, first half we were sharp and caused them a lot of problems. They come on strong second half, though, and, you know, we defended resolutely. A little bit of a threat towards the end of the game, particularly down our left-hand side as well, which, you know, we needed to. Otherwise, it would have been just, a constant bombardment, and we came through it, find some passes, and, as I said, particularly down the left-hand side there, finished quite strongly.
And Lawrence Vigrou demonstrated why it was so important that he signed. He was outstanding in that second half.
Yeah, he was. I mean, he's a keeper with you know, very good presence. And what we didn't see today as well is his distribution is very good and has been strong all the way through pre-season.
Looked very sharp in that first half.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, we settled quite well, gave him some problems. Scored a very good goal. I was disappointed with just probably sitting back just after that. But having said that, it's a fantastic strike from Willock. You know, we can't sort of say we should have maybe got closer. You know, it's a very, very good shot. But, you know, second period there, we dug in and earned our point.
You did. You made a change in the second half. Was Craig Clay injured?
No, he wasn't. It just felt like we were just losing out slightly in the middle. And maybe unbalanced, a little bit unbalanced, perhaps a forward down, and we needed an extra forward up there, if you like, and you know, the third forward with Smith, with Drinan, and then with Archibald can sometimes keep them off you and get you further up the pitch, and he certainly contributed well as he came on.
Smith made a real impact. How bad is the injury?
Yeah, I don't know yet. We'll assess it. I mean, he did say he felt his hamstring, but hopefully it's not too bad and he won't be out too long, and he'll certainly be wanting to play on Wednesday night.
think it's just 13 weeks since the end of last season when Leighton Orient were last here. There's been so many changes. I think there were six new arrivals in the starting 11, but the team looked very together.
Yeah, there's a good spirit amongst the players and determination. And now we have to make sure we're cohesive and all of the time going through a very, very long season, organised and can produce some quality.
Queen's Park Rangers, it could be a dark horse this season, and it's going to be a real test on Wednesday in the League Cup.
Yeah, it is, but it's a start of a run of home games for us. We want to start the season well, and by, you know, the start of the season, we're looking through August and September, really, where we have a lot of very good sides, you know, one of them here today, and some tough, traditionally tough away games as well. Newport away, Carlisle away, obviously Salford away today. So, you know, it'll be an interesting start, an interesting first 2 months to see, you know, what exactly we have got in this particular level. And the Queen's Park Rangers game on Wednesday anyway starts a little mini run of home games that we want to see if we can impose ourselves as the home side and, you know, really give our crowd something to shout about.
How will you and how do you expect QPR will approach Wednesday night?
It's hard to tell. I mean, traditionally, the bigger clubs and the Championship clubs make a lot of changes in the early rounds of that cup, but that's difficult to tell.
Thanks very much, Kenny.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Good luck.
Thank you. That was Kenny Jackett talking to Dave Victor. And let's also get the views of Dave and Matt, yesterday's commentary team, see what they made of things.
Well, Matt, it's good to be back, isn't it? Especially with the faithful again. And the point, I think, one gained at the bookies' favourites for promotion, Salford City.
Yeah, we know all about 1-1 draws here on the opening day of the season, don't we? But no, it was a fantastic day. Felt like a really special one as well with the fans back. A real proper atmosphere in a football ground. It's been a long time coming, but I think those travelling back to London tonight will be happy with a point.
Six of the eight new arrivals started, but the big summer signing for me was Lawrence Vigrou. He proved his worth. Five excellent saves in that second half.
Yeah, for me, he was the man of the match for the O's. I think he looked calm and composed throughout, but when he was tested in the second half, he pulled off a couple of really big saves and just kept the team settled in the latter stages of the game when Salford started to up the ante.
Huge contrast between the first half and the second. The O's had the better chances, the most of the possession in the opening 45.
Yeah, overall, I was really impressed with the O's and I think we were full value for the point. First half definitely looked sharper than the home side. I just got the feeling Gary Bowyer may have given Salford a rocket at half-time because they came out and caused Orient one or two more questions in the second half. But the O's dealt with it well, stood in there. And as I say, I'm sure Kenny Jackett will be delighted with the point.
I think this season we're going to see a lot more goals from a lot more players. And Omar Beckles, he looked like a striker with that right foot strike.
It was an excellent finish, wasn't it, as the ball came back to him. We saw one in pre-season against Gillingham. Slightly different, in a straighter angle, but he say doesn't go with a cushion, does he? Puts laces through it, gave the keeper absolutely no chance.
Well, it was giving too much space for his goal, wasn't he?
He was. It was, again, you have to give him credit for the strike. I'm sure Kenny will be asking, could he have been closed down quicker, the amount of space he had around him, but fair credit to Willett. That was some strike, top corner, Lawrence Vigrou had no chance.
Over the years, I would have seen O's crumble under that sort of pressure in the second half.
You do feel there's a resolute back four there, don't you? I know Connor Wood came off, but you look at them and say the organisation, it was there to see. Still got Adam Thompson to come into this team as well, and let's not forget that. Jaden Sweeney came on at the end. It just feels like there's a real depth, a real desire to defend and defend solid as a wall and a unit.
And Dan Happy looks a lot more confident alongside Omar Beckles.
Yes, he does. And I think we'll call it there, Dave, because then Kenny Jackett's ready for your interview.
Jolly good. Thank you.
Well, that was an abrupt end, as we say. Kenny was ready for his interview. We've already heard that one. Now, before we come to Steve, who's at the match, our own Darren Burrows was at the match and unfortunately couldn't make it into the studio for us for this recording at the last minute. So instead, well, I spoke to him a little while ago on the telephone. So we've heard the views of Dave and Matt, and we've heard Kenny's views. Well, our own Darren Burrows was at the match yesterday, and Darren, it was an encouraging start to the season overall.
Yeah, it was, Andy. I thought first half we bossed it, and I think that 57% of possession showed that in the first half stats. I think the goal, he took it ever so well, didn't he, for a centre-half. That was pleasing, and we looked comfortable. And then I think there was sort of three things with the goal that they got. Number one, I personally felt we should have closed the guy down a bit quicker. Tom James was slow to close him down. He let him turn And then number two, possibly, I thought Viggs could have perhaps done a bit better with it. Might be been a bit harsh on that one, but I had a very good view of it, unfortunately. And thirdly, it was a very good goal. So, and then after that, to be fair, that did give them a bit of impetus, if I'm honest. And they took that into the second half and most of it. But the good thing was we looked good on the break. Drilling and tired, if I'm going to be a bit critical of anybody, it'd be Kiperano, if I'm honest. I didn't think he affected the game as much as we need him to. And then I felt that Smythe was having a good game. I called him Smythe, not Smith, so we can distinguish between the two. I'm going to start a trend there. I thought Smythe had a very good game. I thought Theo Archibald, when he came on, he made an impact. And what was good as well, which we haven't seen from previous management, was Kenny was quick to make that substitution, which I thought was good, because I thought that gave Theo time to get in the game and affect the game, and not just a cameo appearance at 10, 15 minutes, which I sometimes think is a bit harsh on players. So I was pleased to see that substitution early. I was pleased to see our attacking threat on both flanks. Both fullbacks were whipping in good balls. Bit concerned about the injury that Connor Wood picked up. I'm really hoping that's not serious, because he looks a class act. Had a good game. Yeah, overall, guys, it was a really solid opening first day.
Because obviously Salford, the favourites for promotion, weren't they?
Yeah, I'm struggling to work that one out. Don't get me wrong. I think it's perhaps a bit harsh on them and a bit premature of me to say that, because we've got to see everybody. But if they're the favourites, then well, we should be second favourites.
I mean, you said I've got Cherry Hand sitting here. We will come back to this when Steve Tongue's on the show, talking away. But Terry, actually, you hinted that you thought the keeper might have done a little bit better.
Yeah, the thing is, it wasn't a bad mistake by any stretch of the imagination. It'd been a great save, but I think the fact that he got so close and he got his fingertips on it, he'll probably be a little bit disappointed with himself that he didn't actually get it away. I mean, it would have been a great save.
But as Darren just said, when I saw it, I said, you know, it was a little fake by him, and it sent the defender, you know, flat-footed almost the wrong way. But it did open up that defence, didn't it?
Yeah, they'll probably be, if they're, you know, looking at it in looking at it critically, yeah, they'll be a little bit disappointed. Although you say it was a great strike, but maybe it was a little bit too easy to manoeuvre the space.
He did go on to make 4 or 5 good saves after that.
Yeah, I'd say I read the report and they said second half, he had an excellent second half, which is what you need. You know, when you go away to the top side or any side away from home, you're a little bit under the cosh. You know, if your keeper's there, it's a little added bonus, you know.
Yeah, I mean, overall though, Darren, you know, you said you're satisfied, because obviously you're away from home. You're going to, you know, you're facing your own goal more often than not. So, yeah. I mean, it was a tough old ask. And the last time we got a point away from home on the opening day against Salford, we all know what the season did bring in the end.
That's right. And you are always happy with a point away, and you're particularly happy opening game of the season. The one thing you don't want to do is get hammered first game of the season, do you? So we got that monkey off our back. I think we've got tough opening fixtures, but that can go both ways. That could work in our favour in the end. So I think overall, I haven't seen anything on my social media feed from anybody that wasn't satisfied and said, it's the old cliche, as we all say it, that we would have taken that before kick-off.
Yep, I agree with you. Well, Darren, I'm sorry you couldn't make it to the studio for this, but thanks very much for giving us your view on the match yesterday, and we'll let you get on with your day.
Cheers, Andy. Cheers, Terry, Richard, and I look forward to seeing you all in the studio again soon.
Yeah, all the best, Darren.
Cheers, mate. Well, that was Darren speaking to us earlier, and on the end of the line is a man who was at the stadium yesterday and will give us his take on things, Steve Tongue.
Yes, was actually standing behind the goal very close to Darren, and as he says, right in line with that terrific equaliser. One thing I think nobody's mentioned that's very annoying is that Matty Willock, who only signed for Salford this week, is actually a Waltham Forest boy, I believe. So one that got away, although he got away quite well because he was on Manchester United's books as a kid, so he obviously knows the area up there, so I imagine that Salford was quite an attractive proposition for him. But I agree with with most of what Darren says, although we didn't get a chance to talk after the game. In fact, he was too modest to say that before the game he was the one who said, think it will be the usual 1-1 draw, and implied that we would take that. And I think, just as he says, just about everyone would have done. Salford, as we said, favourites for promotion, apparently with all the bookies, and with that in mind, I was a bit surprised at how poor they were in the first half. I mean, I was expecting them to be a lot better and put us under a lot more pressure. So we stood up very well and probably did have the better of it. But the result in the end, good point, good away point. Psychologically, after that, don't forget, 3-0 defeat at the last game of the season, which left everybody very depressed. That suggests, you know, an improvement, a new era. The six new players and the seventh, who both Kenny and Darren have spoken about, Theo Archibald, who looks very promising, a left-sided player, the one who came on loan from Lincoln, very powerful, is prepared to go past the player on the outside and get a cross in. And a couple of occasions, if our forwards had been following in, there would have been better chances there. And the other point that good parent Darren made, very good substitution, because it was very early in the second half and we were coming under pressure, that the manager decided we needed to change things, which he did, and a very positive substitution to take off Craig Clay, not just stick another defensive player on, but put on an attacking player, Archibald, who gave us an outlet down the left. I thought that also helped Dan Kemp, who had looked a little bit lost in the first half to me, apart from one or two little crosses. He was able to push back as one really of the midfield three, and I think that helped him. In terms of other performances, of course, Vigourou, probably our man of the match, having been player of the season last year. Omar Beckles looks excellent, alongside Dan Happy, and as we said, still with Adam Thompson to come in as well, and Archibald, for me, they were probably the three picks. Connor Wood, good, and even Jaden Sweeney, who came on for a little cameo, did well in that time. A couple of disappointments, I agree, about Hector was below par, for whatever reason. Dan Kemp, better when he moved back into that midfield three, as it were. But we never really got control of the midfield, which was in the second half was why we never controlled the game. I think our best period was just before we got the goal. We were beginning to establish a measure of control then. And even Darren Prattley, not as composed on the ball as he had been in pre-season. And I think Terry will probably appreciate, having played a bit in the lower divisions, that the manager made a good point. I remember when we played those friendlies against the youngsters from Spurs and West Ham, Kenny kept saying, very different games from what we'd expect in League Two. It really, Terry, it's a lot more physical, isn't it? And they what you noticed yesterday, every time we played the ball into midfield or we played the ball up to the front, there was a tackle came in, they were closing us down, there was just no room really to get on the ball and play, and I guess that's what you expect much more in League Two, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, listen, Darren will know that it's all a little bit false in pre-season, isn't it? I mean, midfield especially, it's a minefield in there, and it's very rare that you're going to get much time to get your foot on the ball in there. So, listen, he's a very experienced man, and I'm sure his performances will pick up as we go along.
Yeah, and the one other player who we probably need to talk about is Aaron Drinnen. Works very hard, let's give him credit for that. Closes down the defenders, puts a bit of pressure on the goalkeeper as well. Terrific worker, can hold up the ball. And, of course, he's our one threat in the air. Noticeably, the man who's taken over the old Connor Wilkinson role of the man who Vigourou looks for and Dan Appy looks for those diagonal balls out to the wing. But the fact is, you know, Aaron hasn't scored in four friendlies plus Saturday. That's five games in which he's played nearly all of the 90 minutes. He came from Ipswich without much of a scoring record, and he really needs to get a goal or two. One chance early on, which I think was featured on most of the highlights, he was played in by a very good ball into the sort of inside left channel from Connor Wood, and actually got round the goalkeeper almost, but at that stage then had just too much of an angle to squeeze it in. If that one had gone in, I'm sure that would have helped his confidence as well. But I think a lot of people will be looking at our other big striker who we've signed in Harry Smith, and wondering, is he going to be a better bet? Obviously, he's had fitness problems and we hadn't been able to see him, but would be interesting to know if he's going to be a better bet. And the other option, of course, is Will Sotiriou, who might have been a little bit disappointed not to start at Salford. Then, of course, if you have Rule and Paul Smith, or Smythe, as Darren would like, then you lose that bit of aerial advantage which we've got. So those were, for me, the positives and one or two little negatives. Overall, not really changed my opinion that the defence will be pretty solid. Terrific that we've got Vigouroux back in goal. I think all those supporters who were saying towards the end of the season, well, if he's not interested in the new contract, if he doesn't want to stay, then get rid of him. I hope they're beginning to feel already that it was a very good job that we did keep him.
Yeah, I mean, you hinted there about the managerial change. And Richard, I'll bring you in here. I mean, because proactive management is something that, without being detrimental to any previous manager, it's not something we've seen a lot of. We tended to sit back managerial-wise, and even Justin didn't make changes very early in the game. He'd wait to have gone an hour normally, and Ross the same. Here's a change at half-time. That's a good message, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, like has been mentioned as well, it's a very, you know, a positive change as well. It wasn't just like for like, which I think we see a lot of, especially over the last couple of years. So it was good to try and, you know, we were drawing at the time, and we were obviously going for it as well. It wasn't a case of, you know, we were sitting back and holding on for that result. So, you know, it was unlucky probably in the end. It could have gone either way, I think. But a draw probably a fair result, I suppose. Certainly before the game, most people would definitely have accepted that, I think. So. But yeah, I mean, you're right what you say there. You know, it is good to see those changes being made, and especially so early as well.
I mean, it is unusual, Steve, because I'm right. I mean, both previous managers did wait until, you know, 60, 70 minutes before making changes, didn't they?
Yes, they did. Maybe that's one of those things about experience. I suspect we'll be talking about the manager's experience of every different situation quite a lot this season. You know, no fault of Ross or Joby or anybody else, but they didn't have many games behind them. And it seems to me that until you get to a certain point as a manager, and begin to get maybe a little bit mentally tired of it all, you can only be learning. I mean, so many new situations, so many new things you come up against. And, I mean, you know, Ross said, and he was quite right, that by the time he'd finished, he was a better manager than when he started. But we're very, very lucky to have got this manager, I think. I think everyone at the club appreciates that. And we're going to see the benefits all being well.
But for that to work, Terry, you need strength in depth, don't you? You need a bench that every single player there, you know, as supporters watching, we go, well, you know, if he's got to come on, that's no problem. If he's got to come on, that's no problem. We've got to have confidence in that strength of that bench and say, well, any of those five or whatever could make the first team anyway.
Yeah, I think Steve alluded to the fact that Sotiriou yesterday, he'd be disappointed not to have started. I mean, he's a very handy person. I mean, so I think he's a very good player. The fact that he was on the bench yesterday augurs well, that we've got some, you know, strength in depth up front. But yeah, that's what you're aiming for. I mean, the thing with Kenny making the substitutions, he has to have confidence in his bench, you know, to do that. So I think it's obviously an ongoing process with the new boys coming in. Very promising start, but yeah, when everyone's fit, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we're all fully fit yet there either. So there's boys, I think there's one or two to come back yet, isn't there? So, you know, I think he'll be pleased with all what's gone on pre-season and so far. A long way to go, but as I say, it's a promising start.
Yeah, and any other points of note there, Steve?
Yes. The one thing, when we talked about Hector, I was going to say that I thought he might have been a little bit lucky to stay on for 90 minutes, but really the only other option as a midfielder on the bench was Matt Young, who I believe only made a debut in that final game at Salford at the end of last season. Had a nice little cameo and one or two little games in pre-season this year. So really, if you look at the midfield, Prattley, Hector, Craig Clay and Dan Kemp, and then you're into the youngsters like Matt Young, who will be ready soon. But you could see maybe why Hector was kept on for the 90 minutes, although he wasn't. It was quite a young bench. I mean, Shad Ogie was on there as well, and Nkrumah, the very young winger who had one impressive pre-season game, was on the bench as well. But as Terry said, people like Harry Smith, Adam Thompson to come back in when the squad will look stronger overall. And don't forget, for anybody who didn't hear the very interesting Q&A with various members of the club, the chairman, the manager, director of football and chief executive, it was, I think, Martin Ling and Kenny between them there who, when they were asked about possible new signings before the deadline, the end of August, said there might be one or two, but at the moment it's sensible to wait and just see how the first couple of games pan out, how any injuries pan out, and then see exactly what we need rather than diving in now. I mean, if we were to be looking this week, some people might say, oh, we need a new striker. Some people might say, oh, we need a new midfielder. Oh, we need one more fullback. I think towards the close of the month and the deadline, we will know exactly what we do need, if anything, or if they're prepared to wait till January and go with what we've got.
Steve, just on our midfield, I mean, obviously you've seen more than I have of pre-season and obviously in recent times. I always feel like in our midfield we lack someone driving forward from midfield who links up. Going from my time, obviously Steve Castle was the boy that did that.
Mm.
Do you think there's anyone who could actually kind of fill that role? Because I just think over the last couple of seasons, we've missed that type of player.
Yes. It's never been quite clear what sort of player Hector Kyprianou is going to develop into. I mean, he's a skillful player. He's a reasonably strong physically. Darren Pratley is clearly going to be in the Cisse role. Cisse, for anyone who didn't notice last week, has now signed for Oldham Athletic. So Darren's going to be the defensive holding midfielder. Dan Kemp, I guess, is the slightly more creative one. That's the position that we haven't really had over the last three seasons or so, that very creative foot on the ball type player. And so Hector may be a bet. Dan Kemp, I suspect, will end up with more goals. I mean, even in half a season last year, he ended up as our third highest goal scorer with, I think, five. So we'll be looking to him to get forward. But I did feel, although Kenny talked as though we were playing with two forwards, it felt to me a little bit more like the old 4-3-3 and Dan Kemp started as the wide left player. But was, as I said, I felt better when he tucked in, and then we got Archibald on the left, and good 30 minutes or so that Theo Archibald was given as a substitute, I think has made him a very strong contender for a starting place. So the answer to your question is probably that Dan Kemp is the best bet. He's certainly probably the only one that could play in a sort of number 10 role if we wanted that. When I said I thought the defence would be very solid, the thing I was going to add in the prospects for the season and the overall look of it at the moment is simply, will we score enough goals? I think that is the one question that is still worrying a few people.
Yeah, I mean, we're not. We've got this match against QPR, obviously, as people are listening tonight. Is that a match that you'll learn much from?
You would hope so, because I would think he will play a reasonably strong team without wanting to risk any more injury. Paul Smith, as you said, will be desperate to play against his old club, as people always are. But we don't know whether he will be fit or not, and it will be much more important to save him for the weekend and Exeter. I would be surprised if he did what he mentioned other bigger clubs doing, as using the League Cup, Carabao Cup, as an opportunity to give a lot more and younger players the experience, because they've had a bit of that in pre-season, and it's noticeable that he is settled on what already seems a pretty positive idea of what his best team is. So we'll wait and see on that one. to be honest, we've not only been a League Cup team, we haven't really been a Cup team at all much of the past few years, have we, apart from that FA Trophy run. So I think the long-suffering Orient supporter generally doesn't expect a lot from the Cups. And while it's always nice to put one over a bigger team, Exeter City on Saturday is the most important game and will take priority very much.
Steve, it's funny saying about, like, Kenny sort of said it in his interview about what sort of team QPR will put out, our times change. I remember when we played Crystal Palace in the second or third round back in the day, their front line was Sulaco, Wright and Bright. So it just shows you how times change.
Yeah, no, it was a comparatively new thing. In fact, one of the books I wrote recently, almost the very first instance of it was Manchester United played at the League Cup in Port Vale, and you can tell the date, it was very early 90s, because the real shock was that he gave games to so many of these young people like Scholes and Beckham and two or three others who we'd barely heard of, and it caused such an uproar at Port Vale that the local MP from Staffordshire asked questions in Parliament about how could it be right that Port Vale supporters had paid all this money to see the mighty Manchester United and they were getting all these kids playing. And of course it turned out to be a very good opportunity for them to see some of the players who would go on to be the great stars of the 90s. And Fergie from that point on did it regularly in the League Cup, if not the FA Cup. And as you say, managers since then have just followed suit, very disappointingly for many of us, and something that is reflected in, I think, in the attendances very often, especially the League Cup.
Well, the first couple of rounds are normally notoriously low, aren't they, as they are in the FA Cup. And I mean, I remember Frank Clark once, and I think somebody was disappointed with a performance, and he said, OK, everybody, said, hands up who thinks we can win the League Cup. and he said, well, come on then, put your hands up. If you think we can win the League Cup, put your hands up. And of course, nobody did. He said, well, there you go. He said, so, you know, you move on. He said, we're worried about the league, not the League Cup. But I mean, Terry played in that match against Crystal Palace. I remember rightly, Crystal Palace got a last minute goal. And Terry walked past Terry at the end. He went, that was a shame, wasn't it?
Or words to that effect.
And that was actually what he said. No, that is true. That is actually what Terry said. He went, that was a shame, wasn't it? Anyway, and moved on. But in all seriousness, Terry, when you get a game like that, as a lower league club, you know, they put out a reasonable side, which we expect QPR to put a mixture, I think, to be fair. We probably put a mixture of experience and youth out. But how important is that? You know, okay, even if you lose, if you put in a good shift against that, morale-wise, what does that do to you?
Yeah, I think especially early stage of the season when you're trying to get your fitness up of your first team, and say he won't play always first team, I wouldn't think, Kenny, but it is important to get some sort of momentum going as early as possible. So performance, all right, the result is important, of course, but he'll be looking at players individually and collectively. And with that in mind, you know, pick his team for Exeter at the weekend. But, you know, it is important to a degree. Of course it is. You know, still, be nice if we can nick the game. You know, it isn't the be-all and end-all. But, you know, I remember back, you know, when we played, I always look forward to these nights. As I said, it was a little bit different back when I was playing because the teams we were playing would put a far more first-team orientated side out or experienced side out. But, you know, it is important, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Richard, do you remember when were you around when the Spurs match occurred in the second round of the League Cup?
Was that?
That was 85.
No, literally just before my time.
Was it? Oh, dear, yeah. But I mean, it was a massive boost for everybody. We'd just been relegated and they beat Spurs. You know, they lost over two legs, but they beat Spurs 2-0 and could have been three if Shinners had hit an open net, but he missed it in the last minute. But the boost it gave, and Steve will remember, I mean, the club was on its... We were all on downers after the previous season getting relegated to the bottom division. And there was this boost and it was, you know... And I think the biggest cry that night, without being, you know... The pub bore here. I mean, the biggest laugh of the evening was when they read out the crowd, and you can imagine the stadium was absolutely jammed. There was a little bit of space behind the Orient end, the standing end, but other than that, the stadium was every seat had gone. Behind the Spurs goal was packed. All the enclosure was standing. That was back. They read the crowd out as 13,000, which was 50% capacity. So you just looked and you thought, well, where are we going to put the other 50%? And this massive laugh, you know, went around the stadium when they announced the crowd. It was just bursts of laughter around the stadium, which is something I always remember. But it was a massive boost, Steve. So these matches are important, aren't they?
Absolutely. Just one little thing about crowds, actually, now you've mentioned it. I was very surprised. It may have even been something like the instance you just described. But the official attendance at Salford on Saturday was 1,968. Mm-hmm. Now, there were nearly 500 Orient supporters. So if that's an accurate figure, first of all, Orient had a quarter of the crowd. And I hope people listening and watching on the stream heard us making the noise, getting behind the team. But it doesn't say much for Salford that there were basically 1,500 Salford supporters there for the opening game of the season after about 18 months with no football. And if you look down, I looked at a lot of the other attendances were really quite poor on Saturday. You've got people like Forest Green, another comparatively new league side, less than 2,000. Harrogate, less than 2,000. But even in League One and the Championship, some very poor crowds overall. Richard may know a good few Orient fans and have an idea of what people are thinking. There are friends of mine I've come across who are suggesting they might be a bit reluctant to go back at the moment because of the state of things with COVID. I know Orient in particular are very keen that people should wear masks, but I have to say at Salford on Saturday there were very few masks in sight among the crowd. I wonder if people are generally going to be put off and if we're going to see some quite disappointing attendance figures everywhere, basically.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I think that will be the case. You know, there's people I've spoken to. Certainly, there's a guy I know, and he's actually an Arsenal season ticket holder, but he does go to the Orient as well. And he said to me recently he's not going to renew at Arsenal, but he's going to buy a season ticket at Orient because he thinks there's obviously going to be a lot less people there. Mm. And he's not going to be mingling with as many people. And he wants to just see how it sort of pans out, really. So I think a lot of people will be taking that kind of view on it, to be honest.
Yes, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of say Premier League clubs who might be coming to the O's because of that.
It's probably a good way for us to get a few extra fans, actually. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. But then again, there are Orient supporters who are saying, "Oh, if I've got to wear a mask, I'm not going to come. I'm not going to go to watch football if I have to wear a mask." I mean, previously, if we go on the experience of the previous games, the pre-season friendlies, obviously, there were very thin crowds. The stewards were relaxed, I think is the word, about the actual mask wearing. I think what the club are trying to stress, as really everywhere else, when you're on public transport or wherever you are, if it is genuinely outside anyway, if it's a crowded space, then, you know, you are advised that you should probably still be wearing a mask. And so that applies, say, at half-time or full-time or getting in before the game, or if you're going down to the bars or whatever. They would really appreciate, and it would be sensible and considerate if people were to have a mask with them, at least. During the actual match is another matter, but I think I can attest that you can still shout and offer some support through a mask. So it will be disappointing if too many people are put off, if only because, as we heard, the season ticket sales have been brilliant in the circumstances, you know, they actually revised the target upwards, the crowd, hoping now to get 4,000, the target 4,000. We're already, the last one we heard, we were well above 3,800. So it will be disappointing if people stay away, let's put it like that.
Yeah, and I think as well, sort of people's pre-match rituals will be affected by this. You know, people, you know, are they going to want to get on a crowded train? You know, maybe I'll drive. And I know obviously there's all these new parking restrictions apparently in Leighton. So, you know, going into a pub before the game, having a drink at a bar, are people going to want to do that? And so, you know, there's all these factors to take into account when someone's deciding, I think, to go to a game as well. So it'll be interesting how it plays out, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an awkward one to call this, and I suppose we'll have to suck it and see, as they say, and see what occurs. But when you said the Orient fans weren't wearing masks, Steve, what about the Salford fans?
I didn't notice a lot, to be fair, no. I mean, there is a big deal. Perhaps I shouldn't have mentioned public transport there, because, of course, that is almost entirely indoors in as opposed to being at a football stadium. But the shock at Salford for me was just how few people there were there. Again, hardly any. I mean, the only, what was interesting about League Two, perhaps, is the only decent attendances of those that were published were the really sort of old-fashioned established clubs, places like Carlisle and Tranmere, where they Hartlepool even, where they got 5,000 or 6,000. Otherwise, very disappointing, and some quite big places, you know, places like Blackburn in the Championship, Preston, you know, 10,000, 11,000 there. In fact, the only Stoke, 9,000 people. The only two decent attendances, funnily enough, were not in the Championship at all, but were in League One, which were Ipswich and Sunderland, 20,000-odd at Ipswich, 30,000-odd. Typically at Sunderland.
The thing is, as well, Steve, they weren't competing with the Premiership this weekend
no,
either.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, but the thing is, also, when you remember back, and I mean, all right, I'm getting older. Steve's getting older. We're all getting older. But when you look back, you know, August was still, you know, what they used to call public practice matches, and normally either the last week of August or the first week of September would have been the first league match. And here we are with children on holiday. People, it's a, you know, the school holidays are on. So naturally, the crowds, people are away on holiday. So I think it's a two-way attack on the attendances here. Yes, there are people who are wary of COVID, etc. But also, you've got the holiday crowds. So the crowds would be down considerably, I think, Steve, anyway, at this time of year.
Yeah, so on August the 7th is certainly an early start. The National League are probably more sensible. I suddenly thought, how did Southend and old Josh Coulson and people get on yesterday? But of course, they don't start for another fortnight, I think, which is, as you say, used to be third Saturday in August, rings a bell as the old starting point. Mm. So there is that factor. But against that, you know, people... Someone in the Orient End, when Salford fans were leaving before the end, shouted out, 18 months with no football and you're leaving before the end. I mean, there has, you know, people have been missing it terribly, surely. And you would have thought that people all over the country in the three, the EFL divisions, would have been desperate to get back and see a game. So I was surprised anyway, but it will be very interesting to monitor those figures over the next few weeks at least.
It's one thing I've always, you know, said, that why do you leave? You don't leave the cinema just as they're about to name the killer in the film, do you? I mean, so you always wonder why people leave the football stadium just before the end. I mean, I've done it once since I stopped the commentary, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to leg it, nothing's happening. And I literally stepped outside the stadium and heard the roar. I thought, I don't believe it. It's the first time in 30-odd years I'd left the stadium before the end of a match, and literally I'd got two paces outside the stadium and the goal went in. I thought that would serve me right. So that was the only time I've ever done it. But I said, I've always criticised people for doing that. I've always thought, you know, why bother turning up? Unless it's 5-0 or something, why bother turning up and the game's tight and you're going to beat 2 minutes, 3 minutes of traffic? But at the end of the day, why leave before the end?
I left before the end, Blackpool 95.
Yeah.
Early shower, Terry.
That's an early shower there for Terry. Yeah, 45 minutes. Now, Steve, just on the change of tact a moment, because we've heard, I touched on it the other week on the programme. I said I'd got out of the car. Just as I was getting out of the car, a news item came on about 10 headers being the maximum allowed during training. I just asked the panel that night, had they heard anything? And they all assumed it was for children's football. Well, of course, we've since learned that it's not for children's football. It's this 10 power headers and 10 actual headers for lower league amateur players. Now, what's your thoughts on this?
Well, I think the reason it's become a real talking point, even in the last week or so, more so, has been a very recent research, all quite well-based scientific research, as far as we can tell, about the dangers of heading the ball and the effect on possible dementia, Alzheimer's, etc. I think the wider debate will be, and the longer-term debate will be, not just how many times should you head the ball in training, or should young boys and girls playing football head the ball at all, but could we see a time when heading was actually banned? And I can imagine a lot of people throwing up their hands in horror, and it will be like saying, tackle him from behind his band, and the game's gone to the dogs, and it's not what it was. And I could fully understand if, even if people like Terry at Old Pros thought that that's ridiculous. But, you know, people like me are in no position to contradict the research, which is saying that this is having very serious effects. The one surprise to me in the latest research was that the people who conducted it said that the lighter footballs these days, and they clearly are lighter, the way they swerve around and so on, have almost as bad an effect as the very old leather balls, which of course absorbed all the water and became terrifically heavy. And you could certainly imagine centre halves getting underneath long balls like that on a really wet day and heading the ball away. I remember Stan Cullis, the old Wolves and England centre-half, complained in his playing day about the headaches he used to get after a game. And when he, I mean, we're talking now, the sort of late 30s, 1940s, when he went to a doctor and complained about this, the doctor told him to retire, basically, and he did, on medical advice. So that's 60 years ago. And you've got current, more current players like Tony Cascarino, who has a national league, newspaper column, saying he's very worried that he's going to be suffering himself. Tony, of course, a player who played centre-forward all his career, was a very good header of the ball. He says he's forgetting things now. He's worried. He's occasionally told that he seems to be slurring his words a bit when he's on the air. And he was the one former professional footballer who I've seen come out and say that he could see a time when there would be no heading in football. And I personally think it could come to that.
Well, it certainly could. I mean, I was speaking to Danny Carter, and I mean, Danny, we're going to be doing something with Danny soon, but he's been doing a lot of work behind the scenes to do with this. And I think the thing is, with the weight of the old football, it's been replaced by the speed of the new one. So the effects are the same. You've got a ball hitting you at 120 mile an hour into the head, as opposed to an old heavy one hitting you at 50. But instead of that, so the damage is being caused by the speed of the ball now. You know, that sets off a vibration in your brain. And so I'm going to bring Terry in because we asked Terry to come in really and to talk on this a little bit and get his view on it, because we touched on it before when Steve and Terry were in the studio. Both their dads were non-league footballers, and both suffered with Alzheimer's. And you know, this is something that a lot of ex-professionals and ex-footballers are suffering with, for the reasons you said, Steve. And Terry, you know, obviously it's close to home, that situation for you. But what's your views about this 10-header limit?
Well, so are they going to have someone actually at the training ground to actually count? Or, I mean, are they going to have some sort of referee or some sort of person there? I don't know. I mean, it's, in essence, yes, we all have to accept the medical people saying there is a connection, you know, which we respect. It was unthinkable a little while ago to think there'd be no heading in football, but as Steve has said and other people, it could be going that way. And I don't know the answer. Looking at it from the point of view from the Football League and the powers that be, if it is proven, are they going to get loads of lawsuits as well? I mean, it's a bit of a can of worms, really, isn't it, on a number of levels?
Well, I had a cutting from a football newspaper back in 1966 where the connection was made. The doctor said that, you know, hitting the ball can cause head injury, you know, brain injury. And so people were speaking up, what's that, 66? So, what are we, 55 years ago? Yeah. That medical people were already saying, you know, there is a connection between the headaches that people are getting and possible brain injury and heading the football. And as Steve said before, we've stopped back passes, we've stopped, you know, tackling from behind. Mm. It's been adjusted as you go, but heading's, you know, an intrinsical part of the game. Mm. And but as you say, the difficulty here is, let's transfer that over into a real match situation. It's what you said off air, is What's the referee going to do? Oh, you've headed it already too many times and send you off. I mean, what's you know, so where do we go?
I mean, also, you're saying it was 66 people were talking about it. The thing is, in that 50-odd years now we're starting to see the effects of it. I mean, you know, obviously, back then, they wouldn't. We're kind of, so obviously my dad and Steve's dad and others, that generation now, we're actually seeing the possible effects of what it was, you know, which they wouldn't have known in 66. Because,
well, Nobby Styles and Bobby Charlton, Charlton.
I mean, going back to when I was younger, you know, when people, you know, we'd say, I've gone a bit doolally or whatever, we just sort of just laughed about it, you know, but now we know much more about Alzheimer's and dementia, and it's kind of, it's got, it's finally got a name. I mean, when I was young, dementia, Alzheimer's, I didn't ever hear them words. It's a label now. We know exactly what it is. People know far more about it. As I say, we're now seeing the effects of maybe what's happened in the last 50 years.
So you're are you resigned to the change, or are you thinking
gosh.
This is... I mean, my personal view was I thought it was more important, I don't know what Steve thinks and Richard thinks, but it was more important to stop the children until they develop to about maybe 14, 15, where the bone density isn't there.
For sure. That's an area I think that they've got to look at in the very short term and say, let's stop the kids heading it. I think that's understandable. You know, their bodies, their brains are developing and whatever. So I fully would understand a ban coming in there. I just...
Then you're going to have grown adults who've never headed a football before.
As I said before, it's going to open up a bit of a can of worms. But with regards to children, I don't have any problem with them implementing that as soon as possible.
Richard?
Yeah, I think as you said as well, I mean, heading is such an integral part of the game. I can't see, unless you're literally bringing in no overhead height in football, you know, in 11-a-side, it's just not going to happen, I don't think. So, you know, I can see the link. I can see exactly where the discussion's around it. But it has to be, I think, at that younger age, it makes more sense to do. But, you know, in professional football, I can't see how you can not have to head the ball. I just can't see that happening either. I can't see, you know, I can understand things like pass-back rules coming in and tackles from behind. But, you know, heading, no, I can't see them actually really doing something drastic about it anyway.
Yeah, Steve, your gut feeling.
Well, I wouldn't be... I can't say I would expect to see it, because at my advanced age, I'm not so how long it would take. But I think, yes, I think there might come a day. And it would just be a slightly different style of football. I mean, anyone who's played five-a-side football, for instance, or almost any form of indoor football, I mean, I've talked on here about playing for the last 3 or 4 years, playing walking football. And... It's just a different style of football, which in some ways is coming in anyway, naturally. I mean, when you get a corner in walking football, where the rule, as you just said, is there is no overhead height. If you hit the ball above head height, it's a free kick, the other team. So when it's a corner, you aim to pass the ball to somebody, or you drive it low across goal. And that's how you adapt. We're seeing it a little bit more even now, as I say, when and Lawrence Vigouroux doesn't take a long goal kick every time, as players always used to. You know, he knocks it very short to Dan Happy, who knocks it very short to the left back, and then maybe you think about playing a longer ball. Of course, it would change the game, and there will be resistance in many quarters, but I wouldn't be at all surprised. And it will start, as you say, with younger players being banned, and there will be a lot of pressure for that now from parents, because there's been a terrific increase, as we've seen in women's football and girls' football in particular, and I suspect that parents of that generation, who may not be huge football fans themselves, will look at this sort of research, and they will not want their children involved in that. I mean, to make a comparison with another sport, maybe rugby union. I mean, I'm frightened these days looking at rugby and the scrums and the big hits in rugby and the size of the players. Those, you wonder how much protection they're getting from those scrum caps, which is something that's been mentioned in football, but apparently is not going to help at all. I don't know if you've seen people saying that the scrum cap wouldn't stop the danger, the damage from heading the ball at all. So I think, not necessarily in my lifetime, But I could see it happening.
Yeah, I mean, it could lead to chaos because, as Terry was saying before, you know, if let's just say Terry Howard's a centre half, and if we know he's only allowed so many headers in a match, now the bench of the opposition are going to know that, and they're going to be telling players, you know, if he's already headed his quota, make sure you get the ball in against Howard because he can't head it, you know, and if he does,
some would say I wasn't there.
You can see how it's going to alter the game. I mean, sports do alter. We know, you know, you can limit the number of bounces in cricket, etc., and things like that. So all sports get adjusted as they go along, some for the better, some not so. But as I say, we've got to weigh this up against people's medical health and something down the line. You know, somebody's entertainment isn't as important as somebody's health. So we do have to draw a line on this and say that I think we've all got to accept whatever medical findings come up and whatever recommendations are brought forward. Steve.
Yes, and as I say, the pressure will increase both from the medical fraternity and, as I say, from parents. I think the idea of a set number of headers during a game, I think, is impractical. Yeah. The recommendations I'd seen on that applied really purely to training, and it would just be down to club coach. I mean, clubs are aware these days in many areas that they have a sort of duty of care to their players. And the health scares that we've seen to people like Christian Eriksen have made us thankfully a bit more aware of some of that, and that would be just a matter of sort of internal monitoring, really. But in the longer term, I wouldn't be surprised to see a ban.
No. Well, I'll tell you what, thanks, Steve, for joining us on the phone tonight. And thank you to Terry for coming in. And thank you, Richard. Hopefully, all being well, we'll be with you later in the evening with a look at the Queen's Park Rangers match. You'll be able to upload that. We'll put it out on Twitter and Facebook, etc., and online on the Phoenix website. In the meantime, have a great week, everybody. And hope you have a great, great time watching the football tonight against Queen's Park Rangers. We'll catch you this time next week on Phoenix 98 FM. In the meantime, for me, Andy Gilson, Terry Howard, Richard Priest, and from Steve Tung on the end of the phone, and Darren, it's good night.
It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. Cause there's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an orienteer. It's only a quid. Get a cup of tea, but there ain't no lids, cause it's an up to pop. Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. We had an FA Cup semi, 78. We had John Sitton at his most irate. We were club reviver, but we don't care. We had checkered shirts, we had Tate's hair. I remember the moment that Lee Spill scored. I remember it's done on the message board. I remember the pleasure, I remember the pain, and I want to hear rocking all over the world again. This ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. This is ain't Upton Park, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world. Till the end. If I thought you'd score, but I haven't seen a goal in
God knows when. And I want to hear rock and roll all over the world again. Cos this ain't Arts and Pop, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is Eton, and you're gonna hear rock and roll all over the world again. Cos this ain't Arts and Pop, it's Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is Eton, and you're gonna hear